This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Trouble with Iran.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The oil markets are watching this Iran situation very closely. Today, the UN Security Council holds its first official meeting to decide what to do about Iran and its nuclear program. The U.S. has implied that Iran could face sanctions if it doesn't agree to international demands. But as Elisa Roth reports, that's probably unlikely.
Iran has been off limits to American businesses for years. Meanwhile, the EU, Russia, and China, among others, have invested heavily. It would be hard to convince them to approve economic sanctions against Iran, says the Carnegie Endowment's George Perkovich.
The world doesn't have an interest in trying to rapidly escalate a crisis with Iran on the nuclear issue.
Imposing sanctions, he says, would give the world the sense the UN is playing bully against the underdog. In any case, it's not clear it would even be possible to impose economic sanctions, says Ray Tacky of the Council on Foreign Relations.
The petroleum market being the way it is, Iran having some sort of a leverage over the volatility of that market, I don't think you see the type of sanctions that could actually hurt Iran, particularly in this oil and gas structure.
He says that's because too many countries are invested in Iran's petroleum industry. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In India, the tech business has all the potential in the world. Exhibit A, Dell. The world's largest computer maker said today it plans to double its workforce in India within 3 years. Chairman Michael Dell says the company will have 20,000 people working at its call centers and other facilities. It also plans to open a manufacturing plant and wants to sell PCs to the booming Indian market. In this country, Stanford University is a huge technology center, right in the heart of Silicon Valley. Money is just pouring into that school. Last year, its endowment grew 23% to over $12 billion. Now Stanford is spreading the wealth to pay for students who wouldn't be able to foot the bill otherwise. Janet Babin reports.
If you can get in, a semester of undergraduate tuition and expenses at Stanford will run you $47,000. Too much for most low and moderate income applicants to even consider. So now, instead of losing those students to sticker shock, Stanford will pay their tuition in full if their family income is below $45,000 a year. Richard Shaw is Stanford's dean of undergraduate admissions. He says the message to talented undergrads is clear.
It is possible to attend the most selective universities in the country, and particularly Stanford, and that you shouldn't let cost be a barrier.
Shaw says the new tuition plan is funded solely through alumni and the endowment. About 10% of Stanford's undergraduates are considered low-income students. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Perhaps Americans really aren't that wine savvy. Apparently, all you have to do is put a picture of an animal on the bottle. Research from AC Nielsen finds that a new wine sells twice as well when there's a monkey or a fish or a loon on the label. Of course, it could have something to do with the price. Those wines tend to cost between $8 and $12 a bottle. Not a whole lot to complain about on Wall Street right now. Friday, the Dow climbed 26 points to 11,279. The NASDAQ was up 7. The S&P 500 gained a couple. All three indexes gained close to 2% for the week, and they're all near five-year highs. This is Marketplace. It's pretty easy to donate money when it's someone else's money, but one wealthy philanthropist thinks that's a good way to spread his message. Lisa Napoli has more.
Hal Hinkle traded Wall Street for Planet Earth. This self-styled environmentalist wants you to sign up to read 6 emails he's written about global warming, and in return, he'll donate $100 in your name to one of 3 eco-themed charities.
This is my chance to say, friends, please, listen now.
Hinkle started the Global Warming Challenge after making a mint as an entrepreneur and retiring, but he didn't want to just sit back and consume.
Things worked out just wonderful for me. And I owe something back.
What does that mean to you? $500. That's what he'll reimburse if you buy a new Prius, the environmentally friendly hybrid. Just one catch. Your family has to make less than $80,000 a year. I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report. We are produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by the Society for Human Resource Management. HR. Leading people. Leading organizations. Online at shrm.org. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation. On the web at kauffman.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
We found out last week the huge newspaper chain Knight Ridder will be sold to its rival McClatchy. And some of Knight Ridder's well-known papers could face job cuts and other trouble. Newsweek's Alan Sloan joins us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Would you call this the end of a great newspaper empire?
I surely would, and if I could write epic histories, I would call it the decline and fall of the Knight Ridder newspaper empire, where I worked for something over 10 years.
So what happened?
The company fell into the hands of a gentleman named P. Anthony Ridder, who became the chief executive, and for whatever reasons, Tony Ridder decided that what really mattered running this company is what Wall Street wanted. First, Wall Street wanted profit margins. So you cut jobs and you cut jobs and you cut jobs and you raise the profit margins. Then one day they wake up on Wall Street and realize, my God, you can have a 30 or 32% profit margin, but newspapers have got this problem where there's this internet and the readers are leaving and the ads are leaving, and suddenly Wall Street decides it wants growth. So suddenly a bunch of newspaper chains, one of whom was Knight Ridder, fall into disfavor on Wall Street. So Tony Ridder puts the company up for sale, and that's the end of it. And he sails off into the sunset crying about how upset he is that, you know, this empire is gone, but, you know, still taking a batch of money with him. And as best I could see, making no attempt whatever to forestall this.
So what strategy should have the newspaper chain followed?
If you look at every industry on Wall Street, the people who succeed are people who are either in a great business or who have some sort of strategy to, you know, watch the costs but make the company bigger and grow it. And there wasn't any strategy except to try to get the stock price up. And getting the stock price up should be the result of your strategy. It should not be the goal of your strategy.
I know that the folks who work at these newspapers are pretty worried. Is there any reason for optimism?
McClatchy seems to believe in something resembling journalism. When this transaction was announced last week, the chairman said all sorts of optimistic things about the future of a combined newspaper and internet presence in markets that I happen to believe as well. Wall Street's idea of newspapers is it, you know, bottoming out. I happen to think Wall Street is wrong. But then again, I'm a romantic and I love newspapers and I believe in them. And I have a substantial portion of my personal net worth invested in newspaper stocks. So I better believe.
Alan Sloan, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Scott.
Alan Sloan is the Wall Street editor for Newsweek magazine. He'll be back next week with another edition of the Sloan Sessions. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
How would you answer this one?
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.